and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bolkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 571.
That's right. Tonight we are wrapping up coverage of Philip Kennedy Johnson and Montos's Green Lantern War Journal with coverage of both issues 11 and 12. You ready to hop right into it?
No, but I suppose that much like pulling a Band-Aid off, I guess you don't have much. I guess the best way to do it is just to dive right in. So let me do the creative team first, even though, again, nothing much, I think, changes in this. So issue 11 is Knights and Dragons, Philip Kennedy Johnson, Montos, Adriano Lucas, Dave Sharp, Montos, and Pasquale Ferrara did the cover artist. Variant cover was Chuma Hill, Jillian Grant, assistant editor, Kathleen Wisniewski is the editor, and Paul Kaminsky. Yes, that Paul Kaminsky remains the group editor. So we pick up, I guess, where we left off. It seems like it's been forever since we touched upon the story, which says volumes. So we're getting more insights into the way things used to be for old Grin and his daughter, and how the Radiant Host before they became the Radiant Dead, and more stuff that isn't overly thrilling. And of course, this now that translates directly to where we are now with, you know, old Grin and his daughter being the Revenant Queen and all this stuff, and John Stewart trying to deal with them. We have Byla, who is useless for most of this whole story, except for one key moment that he's talking to John Stewart saying, "Hey, I told you not to come here." And because he's basically being groomed to be the host, the new host body, I suppose, of, I guess that's the best way to describe it, for Olgrin. But John Stewart gets some beneficial information, I suppose, from seeing how things used to be before things went afoul, because we kind of basically found out that Olgrin got tricked by, it must be his brother, another brother, into killing his daughter. And that's basically what made Olgrin go mad. And that's why Byla had to betray him, because of his rage was going to basically destroy everything if him and the other gods didn't put him in check. So that's the background information we get here. We cut back to Metropolis, where Steel and Natasha are trying to get in to help Shirley Stewart and the construct version of Ellie. And it's not really going too well. Shirley has been infected basically by the Radiant Dead, but Ellie is able to keep it in check for a certain period of time. Ellie realizes that, comes to the conclusion anyway, that, hey, it's like we're kind of running out of time here with Star Shroud. But if they can create if Star Shroud can create his own dimension, then maybe I can create another dimension, a little like pocket dimension to take us out of. We do get the revelation that Shirley, in her moments of clarity, is aware that this really isn't Ellie, that Ellie's dead. But this act of John Stewart made John Stewart happy by making her happy. So that somehow made her happy. One of those things is like, I know this makes John happy, making me happy, so I'm happy for him. One of those things. So that's kind of where we go with this. And then we end up at this point where essentially Shirley Stewart ends up almost becoming like wearing the Ellie Rose construct as a suit of armor, pretty much. That she's inside this Ellie Rose construct to be able to deal with the next confrontation with Star Shroud. Back in the Dark Star of the Fan, we continue to have more pseudo flashbacks, and John Stewart pretty much says, "Hey, John Stewart kind of turns the tables a little bit and says, "Hey, you know, I've been kind of playing along with this, and I've just been kind of marveling at the fact of what basically you guys could have been But Olgren and what is her name? Anya, Ada, whatever her name is. That's what they could have been if things hadn't gone awry. And he and pretty much John Stewart starts putting the stuff in Ajna, that he starts putting some of the stuff in check, trying to rein this in, and he starts construct. I guess what I don't even know what he's doing here. Like he constructs another world, and that's some because this is kind of convoluted. It's a great splash page, but John Stewart comes back and he starts rebuilding and John Stewart kind of understands what's going on here. And he goes, I'm not just a guardian. I'm a Green Lantern. I'm a guardian. I'm the builder. And he just needed to basically understand how the Dark Star of the Fen works. And he starts recreating the necropolis or the crypt. And let's see, I'm just trying to go through this.
He's basically taking all the flotsam that got sucked into the Dark Star of the Fen and rebuilding everything that came through it, including the necropolis. And as we later see, the ships of the people, which isn't important right now, but he's rebuilding everything.
Yes, because the concept of in issue 11, theoretically, is that if they could rebuild the necropolis and if they could put back the Dark Star ring to the necropolis, the idea was that would basically solve most of these problems, like returning things to the status quo. So he's in the process of trying to do all this when, of course, we get Guy and Shepard, who have found their way into the Dark Star of the Fen, showing up to help John, and they're asking, "Hey, you left anything for us?" And it's like, "I think I can find some things for you guys to do." And that ends issue 11. So let's. Best thing about issue 12 is the nice splash page about 0 hour anniversary issue. But we go back to Dark Star of the Fen. We find out that, John's like, the Dark Star is shut. We can win this, destroy the last of the Radiant Host, return the Dark Star ring to Ajna's crypt, and we can finally go home. Well, we kind of find out that part of this, as it turns out, is kind of like a trap, theoretically, because Olgren was trying to get Byla there so he could take his revenge on him for quote unquote betraying him. So he fatally wounds Byla. But in the process, Byla, who has basically given us almost nothing of use from an informational perspective for 6 issues now, finally gives us something straightforward and tells John Stewart to just remember, and you have this ring on your finger, but what you have to remember is this isn't like a Green Lantern ring. That you can't just, it's not a mere weapon like the, it's like you can use it to fight them, but you can quote unquote command them, which is really important. But as we see, it becomes a little too easy at the end in a way. We cut back to Metropolis and we continue dealing with the ongoing battle between Star Shroud and the Ellie Shirley Stewart construct. That doesn't last long as far as because they cut back to the Dark Star of the Fen. We see Guy and Shepard are doing a little bit to help John. John's actually defending Shepard here because Guy says this guy pretty much doesn't know anything. But it's like, hey, he's able to do some things with his ring that I wasn't at his age. So basically cut him some slack. We do see there is a nice picture of, like, you see, I guess, Olgren's hand supposedly like coming out of the necropolis when he's about seemingly coming to claim John. But John actually takes Byla's words to heart and basically... Only because he's got Olgren's ring on his hand, the Dark Star ring, he basically can tell Olgren's will, his people, his followers, whatever the hell these really are, all these parts of what he was, he basically tells them to do what he wants. So he starts controlling them. He wraps them up into a nice, neat package. They're not dead, conveniently enough, but it's like they still exist, but they can't come back here unless I bring them. This is where Chad mentioned he also, besides recreating the necropolis, he pulled all the ships back together, but their engines were still inoperative and they didn't have fuel. But of course, now they're running on green energy. So, hey, they don't need fuel. Everything's great. Because another convoluted part where I guess we have the Fen, which is independent of everything we've seen, these creatures, I guess. And it's like, we'll take the Fen with us if they'll come. They've been changed by the Dark Stars, but maybe their minds will return in time, even if their forms cannot. Seems like a pretty risky gamble. Nonetheless, John now picks up on what's going on at Metropolis, and they got to get back there fast. At the moment of truth, they kind of reference the story we had heard that Shirley telling to Ellie, and back and forth about the night about the Knights earlier in the series. And Star Shroud, just when it seems like Star Shroud's about to potentially wipe out Ellie and Shirley, of course, John shows up because John has the Dark Star ring and the Green Lantern ring. And he pretty much wipes out Varen. And now we deal with Shirley Stewart, who is dying. She has the infection of the Radiant Dead. John, you basically, well, hey, I control the Radiant Dead, so they answer to me now. So he takes care of her infection, which I hope he takes care of his own too. That'd be kind of be stupid if he didn't do that as well. By the way, we have no evidence that he does that, but that would be smart because he seemingly has to wear that Green Lantern ring because that he's permanently infected, at least up until now. And this is where it kind of gets convoluted. It looks like he basically, the construct of Ellie Rose continues on. And I believe he basically takes Shirley Stewart and makes her part of his Green Lantern ring. Is that what he does? He puts her inside his Green Lantern ring.
So this is something we'll talk a little bit more about, but there's a lot of interpretations of what he's doing there.
Yeah, but it's up in the, my initial impression was that basically he created a construct of Ellie, but Shirley was inside it. But then when you look at the end, there's three distinct beings, and the way, and Shirley doesn't enter the picture in a conversation until he's talking to the ring. And that, so I think my,
at best, what I think is, as long as he's not putting off dealing with the death of his mother and like making this whole grieving process even worse for himself, at best, I think maybe what he did is download Shirley's personality as the same way you can like go. This is a crass a comparison, but the same way you can choose a voice for your navigational system on your apps these days, and you could like have Darth Vader guide you down the streets and stuff like that. He chose a personality and a voice for the AI of his ring and made that his mother. That's the best interpretation I have of this. Because if he like, you know, put her in the ring and it's really her independently thinking for herself, then I have problems.
Well, I think we're kind of, I don't know. To me, I think we're supposed to, I have problems with it because it still seems like he's playing God no matter how we slice it. But yeah, that part is open to interpretation, and that pretty much really ends the issue because they're testing their capabilities, and Ellie is still alive, quote unquote, and she's becoming more masterful with her constructs. And like I mentioned, we don't really get Shirley's introduction into this until he asked the ring, you know, what's the load capacity. And first we just get an answer, a mathematical answer, but then you get a, but you didn't need me to tell you that, John. And then things like that. And it's one way or the other. It's either, yes, either he's allowed an essence of his mom or a duplicate like pattern of his mom to be in his ring, or he really absorbed his mom into the ring. But I'm not really sure, but I don't know if it changes all that much. Either, like you said, it might change it based on how parallax like John is being here. But either way, it doesn't change the outcome of the story. And that's it.
I propose we tackle this two ways. The first, we split it in half, and we deal with the Dark Star of the Fen, Olgrin, the actual power plot, blah blah blah, and then we talk about Shirley, Ellie Rose, and all of that. So because all along it's been two different parts of the story, so why not in the final episode address it as two different parts? So any of our commentary and thoughts first on this Olgrin stuff.
The only thing about the Olgrin stuff, well, the positive, if there is any, is that at least, well, it's still hard to be positive. I don't care, period. Let's be honest. I don't think you care. I don't think most people give a shit. I mean, even Dan, I think, acknowledged that the Olgrin part as a story, he didn't give a crap. The only thing interesting about it is just the concept that, and again, and this is extremely self-serving too. This is why it's kind of a positive, but it's a negative too. Because Philip Kennedy Johnson conveniently in the narrative of the story in the issue 11, I believe, I think it's 11, when they're talking about the fact that whatever Olgrin did to his brother, because his brother tricks Olgrin into killing his daughter.
A different brother than Byla.
Yes, another brother. I mean, yeah. It theoretically could have been a brother-in-law, because all they really say is the uncle, that Anjo was tricked that Anja's uncle basically tricked, but it's got to be. No matter how you slice it, it's brother or brother-in-law. I'm going to assume it's a real biological a brother. That another brother tricked Olgrin into killing his own daughter. And that basically made him go Parallaxian because he was trying to fix things in his own way. But that sent him off the deep end. And that's what and his rage and his anger was going to lead to the destruction, not just of this of that universe, but everything, which is why Byla betrayed him and worked with the other gods to stop him. But it's really self-serving because what Olgrin actually did to the brother in question, they purposely have Byla says, well, that's a story for like another day, which, of course, no, it's not because nobody cares. But it kind of hints that somewhere down the road, Philip Kennedy Johnson will probably want to tell that story, which is fine. Just please don't do it in the Green Lantern book. But I guess there's a little fleshing out of the Olgrin thing. I guess it's nice to know that they weren't completely warped to start with. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it matters all that much. The thing that's more frustrating in the whole thing is friggin' Byla, who was doing these cryptic bullshit for 6 issues, telling you just enough information in cryptic ways to not give you anything. Gives you the closest thing to a straight answer. Kind of like what, what the hell was his name in the Thorn run? The guy, what's his name began with the L. The guy was doing the same exact thing.
The new god, whatever his name was.
Yeah,
Lonar?
Might have been Lonar.
I don't remember.
But doing the same exact thing, being extremely cryptic for almost the entire time instead of telling you, just giving you straight answers. Finally gave you a pretty straight answer, and all of a sudden, once John Stewart got that, then he solved the problem in like 2 seconds easy.
Well, yeah. also making him mysterious and like and him the answers he does give is like, no, that won't work, because I'm looking specifically because I pulled it up because I seem to remember a conversation. So in War Journal issue 9, there's a point where, you know, after John's initial foray into, you know, this world of Olgrin and the memories and everything else like that, Byla gets him pulled out again before he goes back in later on. And he goes, okay, all right, Byla, well, then what's the plan? If I went back into the Dark Star, beat her ass and got that ring from her, what then? Is that how we win this thing? And he goes, to get you out of there, I played a trick I will not be able to play again. I risked everything to get you out because I believe you might be the only one who can get these people home. But the Dark Star is her world. If you go back in there, you will fail, and all these people will, depending on you, will die. So he's just not only being mysterious when John is asking questions of him and he's answering, he's just wrong. Like, yeah. That's totally fine for someone to be fallible, but it's just like, how are we supposed to rely on anything coming out of Byla's mouth if he's also wrong about everything he's saying, and the solution is just going to be John at all points going, don't tell, because that's become the theme of this series. John at every turn going, don't tell me what I can't do.
Right.
So, well, then what was the point of Byla being wrong? Just so we have another one of those moments where it was like, man, John Stewart is not only super powerful, but somebody as ancient and who actually was an old god misjudged him. Like, it's not enough for him to have absorbed all this power that he has of the green and now command all this power of Olgrin and this Dark Star of the Fen. But now he's so impressive. We're going to add, you know, this fuel to the fire. He's so impressive that he's also being misjudged and thought too little of by old gods. They don't see his true potential.
Which is also weird on some level, because they've mentioned in the story that basically Olgrin has basically been targeting Jon Stewart to be his new, you know, be his host like for forever. Mm-hmm. So you would think you'd understand what your host was. Yeah, you think you'd understand. This is your perfect vessel. You think you would understand not only the pros to making him your vessel, but the potential obstacles to making. I don't know. I
mean, you could also, and it's not really, it's not in there, but it's not in there. That maybe, like, you know, because Olgrin is depicted to be, in terms of, you know, before he kills his own daughter or whatever and goes off the deep end and all this stuff, a peaceful, loving individual and so on and so forth, a good leader, a good father and a good brother and all those things. Maybe the good is still left in Olgrin sought out John as well. as much as the evil in him.
Yeah, I mean, you could psychoanalyze that.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's no evidence in the story at all for that. I said on the surface, but yes, if you wanted to dig deeper, and God forbid, it just gives me chills up my spine to even say this. But if someone wanted to do a follow-up story one day like that, yes, that's the idea. It's like, oh well, it's like I purposely picked you on not just because the dark part of me thought you'd be the ultimate, you know, the ultimate host body, but because I knew you'd be able to stop that dark part, John.
Well, there's also, too, there's so many parallels between this story, the two halves of this story, because, you know, Ogryn tried to do so many different things to save the Revenant Queen. I forget her name. I'm not even going to try to remember her real name, the daughter.
Anju.
And he's doing so much to try and save his mother. And both pathways are similar, but could lead to are leading to drastically different outcomes based on, you know, the will of the person going through the moment, because they've made no secret of drawing those parallels between these two stories for a while now, talking about how, like, I think it was in one of the prior issues when we were learning that issue where we were learning everything about the Dark Star from the Book of Oa, and they were talking about that original super team, and they're talking about eventually, hey, there were heroes, they were that power, but there was a dark secret, and something to the effect of, like, there was a dark secret and nobody knew the power could corrupt so thoroughly, or something to that effect. And that last little line of dialogue spilled over into a page turn where it was on top of a panel with Ellie Rose and talking about kind of the parallels of the power used back then versus what John had done with, you know, creating Ellie Rose and how that could be unpredictable. So they've been drawing parallels this entire time.
Yes, they have.
Yeah. What else about Ogryn? I keep paging through here. I do like that double page spread. You talked about it. And then the page right before where he goes all, was it Tony Stark in, was it Iron Man 2 where he finally discovers what the element was based on the map of, and he, like, spreads his hands and the virtual thing goes out all around him. That's what that reminded me of.
I mean, the artwork is good. I mean, but that's not going out of much of a limb, because the artwork has been the highlight.
Definitely. I would like an artist edition of this, basically. Not necessarily an absolute edition where it's a massive oversized volume, but I would like a slightly bigger than normal trade paperback size version of this, just in terms of the art alone. There's lots of detail in Montos's work.
I mean, I wish Guy and Shepard played a bigger role in the story.
When they show up for the Shirley thing, they just do a superhero landing and that's about it.
I mean, realistically speaking, other than Shepard doing a few little things and a few little things during that part I described when Guy's kind of making fun of Shepard, like, this guy's like wet behind the ears, and when John kind of gives him his due. That other than that, let's be honest, it's not like Guy and Shepard showing up really are important. They didn't need to show up because they literally don't factor into the resolution at all. I don't know. I guess the best thing I could say about these two issues is that they're not the worst two issues in the series. It does reinforce the idea that I think we both have. The conclusion we both reached a while ago was that, you know, this has kind of been dragging on, and it didn't need to drag on as long. And considering how quickly the story was resolved. Now, maybe it was only resolved as quick as it was, which still doesn't make it work well. It doesn't work well beat wise, it's rhythmic wise. But maybe it only ended the way it did because the book got canceled when it did. So maybe if it had gone on a few more issues, then maybe the resolution would have been a little more meat on the bone. I don't think so, but I'm trying to be glass half full here. But, you know, from the time Byla says, hey, you know, remember, you this basically don't use this. No, don't use the ring to fight against the just command. So basically all he has to do is tell the Darkstar ring what he wants all the Radiant Dead and everything to do. And they have to listen because they're tied into Ogryn and everything. It's like, geez, you couldn't have just told them that before.
Yeah.
Especially since rebuilding the necropolis was really not the key on the surface to really stopping them.
That's true. Well, I mean, the necropolis was, because it was saying, oh man, I'm paging through looking for what the explanation was about why the necropolis specific, because it served an actual function.
I mean, they met.
The necropolis was a living conduit to commune with the will of Olgrin, with the Dark Star ring as its vessel and focal point. And in your confidence that the ring would corrupt me, you put it on my hand, right? So then, so he rebuilds the necropolis for that reason.
So are we to assume that's where he has locked in all the remnants of Olgrin's will and everything?
Yeah, hold on. Olgrin's will was so powerful, an entire universe was born from it. His will was the one the old gods still needed. The necropolis wasn't just a tomb, was it? The technology, the machinery running through it, its architecture, its reliance on Genesis mineral. The Dark Star appeared when the necropolis was destroyed. The necropolis was a living conduit to commune with the will of Olgrin. So basically, everything went haywire the minute they destroyed the necropolis. It lost its, I don't know, the gate lost its lock, I guess.
Well, we know basically that everything started falling apart. Yeah, from the minute the
Malthusians,
you know, pried their way in. But yeah. But let's put it this way: just rebuilding the necropolis wouldn't have solved the problem unless John Stewart still had to command everybody to get basically go back into a dormant state, regardless of whether that was the prison that was more naturally going to hold them or what. It all seemed understood
how it worked. Yeah.
Yeah. It all seemed kind of convenient too, but then again, you kind of understand some of that.
Yeah. Okay. And yeah. You mentioned the Dark Star of the Fen. Yeah, they were just, I mean, they were always in the background, I guess. As sort of a ticking time bomb for people trapped in the Dark Star of the Fen, the longer you're there, the more likely you are to lose yourself, not just mentally, but physically as well, and just become part and parcel with the landscape around you and turn into this type of being. It really never played out anyways, other than that one guy who got tagged in one of the previous issues and transformed. And the guy was like, no, we don't, you know, John was like, we don't leave soldiers behind. He's like, no, man, he's already lost. Like, other than that, it really never served any purpose. Like, maybe just raising the stakes by a half a percentage yet again. But it's like, we're already talking cosmic level threat here. I don't know what adding this little, I don't know, if you get bit, you turn into a zombie threat is adding to the whole thing here.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Olgrin and everything. Should we talk about Shirley Stewart and Ellie Rose?
Yes.
All right. What do you think about some of the Shirley Stewart and Ellie Rose stuff?
I thought it was moderately interesting when you got in issue 11, pretty much when you got to the point where things were really getting desperate and more or less Ellie was going to be like almost like the suit of armor that Shirley was going to be wearing. That's pretty much what we got down to was what she was going to essentially be inside the energy construct Ellie Rose and they were going to fight together. Since they did mention in the story about how John, I guess, had always said that because of how strong his mother was, that she's the one who should have gotten the ring instead of him.
I got the sense that was actually Shirley once, but just like, Ellie became the ring, and then like because of the whole thing was a construct around her, that was like a young version of Shirley. That wasn't necessarily Ellie.
I would have to go back and look at it, but the way it's described, that wouldn't, I don't think that would match. But again, in all honesty, it doesn't really change all that much. That part was, again, moderately interesting, but like a lot of the story, it was, these things have been dragged out for so long that it's kind of hard to care all that much. And no matter how, and no matter where, no matter what one's interpretation is, where we leave off, you do have John Stewart kind of playing God a lot, which is fine, but it is a little hypocritical to us if in the sliding scale of, since it used to be the ultimate cardinal sin if you were a Green Lantern was using your powers for personal gain. And John Stewart does a lot of that when it comes to his sister and his mother. a lot of self-serving use of his powers. So, and again, I guess you could certainly, it's relatable. There's no doubt it's relatable, but on some level, objectively, it's kind of hard to say, hey, you know, Hal trying to resurrect Coast City was a horrible thing because all those millions of people died, and plus he never had a chance to even try to save them. That was a sin, and he was trying to correct that sin that never should have happened. And it's like that's bad because you're messing with what's been. And then you have Jon Stewart kind of doing that a lot in very self-serving ways, because it doesn't seemingly have any. Somebody will probably make it have some massive ramifications for the DCU, which is why he did this or why he had to do it. But short term, it's extremely self-serving for no other reason, because it makes Jon happy. And Jon either wants to assuage some of his guilt over his sister, and or making it, you know, and doesn't want to lose his mother. So,
yeah. But. I enjoyed it. Obviously, you know, Phil Kennedy Johnson's been doing a lot of setup and stuff, and really smart writing when it comes to the Alzheimer's and things like that. But then just incorporating such a realistic, horrific concept and kind of adapting how we would handle it in a superhero world and stuff like that, while still maintaining its seriousness and stuff like that to the best of his ability, I think. I thought it was really cool because, yeah, you know, his love of his mom and talking about how she would have been a perfect Green Lantern and things like that. Look, I hope this doesn't sound racist, but like it doesn't match the rest of the story. But right, the moments right before Ellie becomes like the armor for Shirley, and like they're showing her like doing some civil rights work and protecting people and stuff like that. Man, I was like, if this had a theme, it would be some Superfly type shit. Like it would be like that song, Put Your Money Where Your Mouth Is from Car Wash, or, you know, some of the music they tried to capture when they did the first season of Luke Cage, like just some blaxploitation peak era 70s. Blaxploitation, civil rights, like funkadelic type shit. Because the minute she steps on scene is when you'd get, you know, like, well, the minute like we're getting the flashback for the civil rights work and Ellie saying, you know, I have no ring to give you, but if you would let me be your weapon and your armor, like that's when the horns would start coming in. And then the minute we see kind of Shirley and Ellie merged into one as a fully realized, you know, weapon against, you know, this evil. That's when I never figured out what like instrument did that back in the 70s for that kind of funk music. But was it the guitar with like a whammy bar when you would get the like the waka waka like kind of thing? You know what I'm talking about?
I do, but I'm not entirely sure. And
just like yeah, when that beat drops and it starts getting real funky, like that's the kind of shit that I heard in my head when we had like Shirley fully realized as, you know, obviously she's not a lantern, but as a lantern, because I mean she does end up like making some constructs in issue 12 and stuff like that. So like in my mind, that part of the story went full blaxploitation. I thought it was cool as shit.
When Chad gets canceled and I'm looking for a new host, remember this moment. The ultimate irony, Chad would be the one getting canceled. Who would have thought that?
Always been portrayed as like, even before now, like Shirley has always been portrayed as like a civil rights worker and stuff like that, and really fighting for the community and stuff like that. So that was always something they kind of captured in his history. Now, obviously, like he in his introduction was like, you know, down and out, you know, he was the angry black architect and down on the white man and all this stuff. So like, but the older the story gets, the more you have to like make his parents that, as opposed to him who grew up in the military and, you know, like that whole thing. So like making his mom that and giving her a quote unquote, you know, quote unquote, a ring, not a ring, but we get the idea. And giving her that chance to really fight the power. I thought that was like a coolest shit moment.
No, I can understand that. We'll have to see where they go with this, just like we'll have to see. To me, it does raise questions about where they're going with this in the main book, now that we know they're working not just Jon Stewart into the book, but somehow now Tharos is going to want this Darkstar ring. And so... Which would make sense if you'd understand, I suppose, what it is, but
yeah,
I don't have a lot of confidence. I don't want this Dark Star ring to be like, to be the, I don't know, the be all end all now about with Jon Stewart. And it seems like in a way, until we, unless they already know, unless there's already a plan to how to get, how he's going to get rid of it and where it's, and it's in a quote unquote safe way. So nobody else can get it, or seemingly no one else can get it. They kind of, it's almost like writing themselves into a corner in a way, because it seems like it's going to be real difficult writing stories in which that ring is not going to somehow be rearing its head more times than not, either because villains are going to want it, or because it'll be curious to see if he uses it at all. He's not supposed to be able to use it as a true weapon, but then again, he can control everything with it. I don't know. It's odd. You would think that would be something that you'd want to put someplace else. You'd want to bury somewhere, hide someplace deep where no one can get to it. I don't know. So then maybe that might be the most intriguing part of it. How they're going to resolve him having that ring in his Green Lantern ring. Just like it would be nice if there's some kind of acknowledgement. We assume now there's an out anyway for him being able to cure his own infection. They don't tell us that he did it, but if he can cure Shirley's physical infection, you would think he'd be able to cure his own, which then would mean he wouldn't necessarily need to have that Green Lantern ring on all the time, or else it's going to be a problem, because you know at some point that ring's either going to be removed from his finger, or it's going to be drained somehow, and then he's going to be in deep shit if he didn't do it. So I don't know. It's
now there's also the cliffhanger of, we have a lantern from another universe still here.
Yeah, let's see what they do with that. I mean, because I don't know. Because they didn't mention Shepard in the solicits, right?
Not for Civil Corps special at the very least.
Or not even in the Green Lantern tie-in issue,
That's the Civil Corps special.
Doesn't it tie into the main book too?
Well, the Civil Corps special is its own thing. It's kind of the way. Yeah.
But which one are they writing together? Is that the Civil Corps special?
That's the Civil Corps special. That's a single issue, and then we have Green Lantern 16, which is.
When Theros is eyeing
John
the ring.
Stewart, yeah. Well, no, as Theros is eyeing the ring in the Civil Corps special. So here, let's just read it for the people at home. Civil Corps special solicit reads, the war for the fate of the Green Lantern Corps starts here. Lord Premier Theros sends a surprising foe to retrieve the Dark Star ring from John Stewart, which leads to a desperate plan to expose the United Planets as a force of evil. Allies and enemies will join this special issue to launch the Green Lanterns in a direction which will change the DC cosmos forever. Whereas Green Lantern 16 is, the solicit reads, can the Green Lantern Corps unlock the secret of the Dark Star? The seeds of war have been sown, and now a massive battle rages across the galaxy. Hal Jordan, John Stewart, and Guy Gardner must race to unlock the mystery of the Dark Star resurrection, what it means for their beloved friend Kilowog, and just how to battle an entire planet. The red rage of Mogo rains down on our heroes as the Civil Corps heats up.
So that was for both issues you read?
Yes.
Okay.
The first one was Civil Corps special.
Right. So either way, both are tied into the Dark Star ring.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah. neither mention Shepard or show him in any of the solicit.
Yes.
Art.
So let's see what happens. We might get this off panel little say, oh, Shepard been back to his own universe now. I don't know. It would kind of suck, because honestly, Shepard was one of the more, not that they did a whole lot with him. Certainly after the story left the backup issues, the backup story in the issues of Green Lantern proper, that they really didn't do much with Shepard. He kind of was wasted, but Shepard was one of the more interesting things in this story.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see. I'm not really that gung ho to see a whole lot more about this Dark Star ring now. Maybe again, like you suggested, maybe Jeremy can do something more interesting with it as far as having that in our universe. Maybe there's something in it that can be made interesting, but it also doesn't help that, you know, we're still dealing with the Tharo stuff, which is about a year and a half now, and it's like because
PKJ is helping him with the Civil Corps special, and not the ongoing series, but just the special. Maybe he's giving him some cliff notes and stuff on, you know, kind of how the power works. But let's also not forget it's also possible that whatever the Dark Star stuff that's going on is more connected with Dark Stars as we traditionally know them, as opposed to the new information we have. I'm not saying like, look, it's very clear. John now has this ring. They're doing this thing. PKJ is helping write it. Like, if you mentioned Darkstar, you're immediately going to think of how Philip Kennedy Johnson wrote it, and it's going to be tied there. But don't forget, it's also possible that Jeremy could grab some of the more modern interpretations of the Darkstar, and maybe try and tie it into what Philip Kennedy Johnson did with his stuff. But it could be there could be still some more unknown than we think if he's just dealing with trying to tie those two ends together, as opposed to just going fully with what Philip Kennedy Johnson came up with.
Yeah, but then what's the point of having him write the Silver Corps thing?
Well,
co-writing.
Yeah, I don't know, but we don't know until we read it. So it's anything's possible.
That is true.
Yeah. That's all I got, though. Art. I think the art was largely great throughout all of it. There's a moment. There were a few moments where I thought that obviously this was around the middle of the series that I thought, man, we're kind of a little light on backgrounds here. That obviously changed as we went further on. I think looking back on those were intentional moments at emotion and trying to focus the story into certain story beats and focus your attention on certain faces and those emotional beats. But still, that doesn't fully, I mean, it could have been for saving some time and letting the artist catch up on a future issue or something. I think the art was the strongest throughout the entire series. I think the up until it gets, you know, extremely supernatural and superhero-y and zany, that the Shirley Stewart struggle with Alzheimer's and everything was very poignant and very well done, I think. And I don't think it necessarily lost a beat just because it had to get sucked into the supernatural superhero type realm. I thought he did a pretty good job at maintaining some of the emotion of that, despite being in that world. I thought some of the John Stewart characterization, forget the plot, the characterization of John Stewart, was largely what I would expect. I don't necessarily have too many problems with it. There were moments where I was like, isn't he just being Hal Jordan right now? or at the very least, Hal would definitely be proud of you right now type of thing, where you just like, hey, screw you. I can do anything. I'm going to go ass first into battle without much of a plan here. And just hope I come out on the other side great. But I think, yeah, for most of it, yeah, it's just the meat, the root of all of it was not necessarily something I was willing to follow. It was the trappings of it and everything surrounding it, not necessarily the main course.
Ultimately, you know, when we first got the Olgren reveal and everything, it's like, and we talked about this, that it seemed like that was self-serving. I said that at the time, that it seemed like that the story was kind of self-serving to a certain extent, that this was the story Philip Kennedy Johnson wanted to pick up on and continue from his War World stuff, and he wanted to continue it, and he took it. And even though, again, like you mentioned, the characterization, for the most part, I would say if you're a John Stewart fan, you might be able to overlook some of the other flaws in this book, because it's mostly a good characterization of John, though. All the stuff with Ellie Rose and his mom and playing God is another. It's debatable at best, because of the fact that it's willing to overlook things that other characters would be zeroing in on, that, well, they shouldn't be doing that because it's Jon Stewart. Oh, we'll look the other way. Kind of like Sansa can be completely Cersei-like at the end of Game of Thrones, but we kind of overlook her selfishness and her cold hearted nature to get what she wanted because, oh, she's a Stark and we're supposed to root for her, even though she's not any different, basically, in some of the things that she's doing. It's kind of like that. But I do think at the end of the day, I don't think there was enough in the story that makes me think this wasn't really self-serving, in the sense that I think he could have told a better Green Lantern story that had less ties to his previous work, but he wanted to tie everything into a nice, neat package, which didn't really help the book. It certainly didn't help the sales on this book. So I don't know.
Did you want to mention those? You had those the other day for at least for issue 11. Do you have 12 now or no?
But what 12? When did 12 come out?
I don't remember.
I don't think so. Give me.
I know you had 11 though.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for because I had all these damn things written down here. I mean, I can find this in a second for the one we need, but it kind of disappoints me that I had this written. I had this piece of paper written in front of me that had all these sales numbers for it. Give me a second. I'll look this up.
Well, I know at one point you had sent it to me in a message, so I'm just scrolling back through.
Right.
Well, I've got 11. If you want to look for 12, if 12, do you think 12 numbers are out right now?
No, because 12. You I need to know what date it. I don't think so because the last thing on Comic Book Revolution was updated on the 22nd. Okay. So I think, but now I'm gonna.
You said Green Lantern War Journal number 11 bounced up from number 188 to 142. That was for 11.
Yeah, I just want to double check if that's the last one. They do a nice job of breaking these down into groupings. So once we get to the Justice League.
But
142.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed this as an art piece more than a story. I will say comparative to other things, especially when I said I enjoyed it as an art piece more than a story. I like it more than the Morrison run. I'll say that. And the Morrison run was double the length, right? 24 issues or so.
Yeah. Plus a one shot. Was it just a one shot or was it a mini? It was a mini, wasn't it? It was a mini, right? And there was an annual and we had an annual too.
Yeah. So I like these 12 issues more than the near 30 issues of the Morrison run that we got. I'll say that in terms of for whatever that means to listeners out there. I would buy a collected edition of this series in terms of like a slightly oversized soft cover, just so I can get a better look at the art. Not necessarily, like I said, like a absolute edition, but just, you know, slightly bigger than normal sized thing so we could really focus in and hone in on the art pages. I'd buy soft cover, not hard cover. And I would prefer an edition where we had the backups and the main story issues all in one volume instead of anything else. So, but I do know that they already have two volumes of this, out there. I don't know if volume two is already out. DC has been getting better at releasing that stuff pretty quickly on the cusp of a final issue. But I don't know for sure yet, but I would hope that there's some, because I'm not going to get two volumes of this to put on my shelf. But if they do a single volume, I think I might get that.
Better you than me. I read the story. I have these issues. I have no desire to revisit it. I don't care how good the art is. I would not going to go back and look at it. The only way I'd ever have to go back and look at it, if there's something that ties into it and we need to go back and flip it, and I have the issues. So that's it. I have to flip through it. Nope, no thanks. That's much more your thing. I don't care how good the art is. If I don't like the story, that doesn't mean I'm not going to be buying it again. If I really like the art and there was a poster or something, or you can get things like that or artwork, that'd be something different. But I'm not. It was okay. I mean, it's not the worst thing we've gotten, but it's not been a great year for Green Lantern. This calendar year hasn't been a great year. You know, we had the Alan Scott stuff. We've had some of the Jeremy book. A lot of this Jeremy book and during this stretch up through now has not been all that strong. Some of the issues more than others. But as we're recording this on September 4th, we've had a lot of really average issues of the Green Lantern main book. So I don't know. It's not. And I don't know. I'm not sure what the hell the Civil Corps thing is going to be. It doesn't make any sense to me. Maybe once we understand what it's about, maybe it will make more sense. It kind of sounds weird to me. So
I think we're going to have more wielders of the Earth-based power battery rings, and they're going to do their own thing. Thus the Green Lantern Civil Corps versus the Green Lantern Corps.
Yep, they'll be making roads. I don't know. We'll see. I'm glad this is over. Hopefully the Jeremy book will at least get this Theros thing off the plate by the end of the year. I'm hoping. I'm really hoping by the time we get to the December solicits, we find out that either it's over or it's like the penultimate issue. we just need to move on because this is kind of like a black hole at this point.
Yeah. All right. What else we got to talk about? I know I have something on my plate I was going to mention briefly, but what did you have anything you wanted to say, talk about?
Well, one thing, which we'll talk about at some point in more detail, is that now I will reference it this way at this moment because now remember that Parallax statue that came out that we saw the renders for?
Yeah.
Well, I did order one from someone. So
it's somebody who has a 3D printer.
Yes, I'm going to have to paint it, which
does you're going to have to paint it.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to it makes me nervous because I'm used to painting things that are much smaller. But on the bright side, as I have jokingly said, it was nice to actually be able to use a normal brush to paint something as opposed to my soldiers that I pretty much use toothpicks on because they're 15 millimeter. So that is something that's going to be a painting project, which, again, I will probably make videos of. And I'll ask you this now because I can edit it out. Can you combine files in your program, in your editing program for videos?
Yes.
Okay. So it's debatable whether I will just do a series of videos released episodically or whether, which I should, theoretically it could be both, could do episodic releases and then just combine them into one video. But
it's easy. You just create a YouTube playlist. And then it just, once one video ends, it automatically.
Oh yeah, that is true. Video. That might be, that's true too.
Yeah.
But I probably will do some small short videos, 5 minutes max, if I'm progressing through the statue. So there are certain colors I'm a little concerned about doing certain areas more than others, but this, it makes me real nervous. Cause obviously if I do a halfway decent job on this, this could be one of the, going along with the Funko Hal Jordan Parallax, it could be the creme de la creme of my personal collection. Mm-hmm. But this statue is pretty damn, and the cape makes me nervous because the cape doesn't look like it was designed purposely to give you the white trim on the back with the circle. It just looked like if you look at the back of that statue, it didn't have that, which, of course, to be technically accurate, you have to do that, which means you have to do it by hand without it being there being a natural pattern on it. So that makes me a little nervous, too. But well, I'll burn that bridge when I come to it. But that's it. And the only other thing is, we're going to just mention in brief, in passing. Yes, we know there are a gazillion rumors going around about casting for the Green Lantern TV show, mostly focusing on Hal. Yes, we understand that. But yes, we also know that even though 2 days ago everybody was talking about just one person, now all of a sudden today there were a whole bunch of other people saying, hey, well, these people are in contention too. So we have decided not to talk about this in great detail at all until something's official. Then we'll talk about it and we'll give her thoughts. But at the moment, you know, it's until something final, it's just rumor or speculation. So there's no point in spending a lot of time on it.
Yeah. Speaking of videos, I have not yet recorded my Ragman unboxing video, mostly because I don't necessarily like sit down and write down like a plan or anything or a script for my videos. But when I do a trading card unboxing, at least I like, you know, I double check before I do the unboxing. I like look into the set, see what cards are in there. I like, are there any favorites? And then I'll like download some of my favorites so I can flash them on the screen and be like, hey, while we're unboxing the cards, you know, here are my top 5 cards I'm looking for. So we, you know, myself and the viewer have something to look forward to as we're going through and I'm kind of talking aimlessly and stuff. And there's like, you know, kind of some high points I want to hit or specific details that I keep in mind. I'll download certain images to flash on the screen as part of the editing process. And I haven't yet kind of mapped out how I want to do this video because I'm not really an action figure guy. And I did see somebody who already did a really, really good video unboxing of this figure that I'll probably point to. I'm still going to do my own, but as you can hear, I still have my boxes here fully boxed up. I will record it and get it up. It should be up before you guys hear this episode. Right now it's Wednesday, September 4th. But as Mark mentioned, I'll have it up Friday or Sunday or something like that. But sorry for the delay on that. I kept thinking, it's the first Ragman figure ever. I should make it something incredibly special. And I just kept hyping it up in my head. But then I saw this other guy who's an actual action figure guy who has an action figure YouTube, did really great about sizing him, knowing what the buck I guess that's what they call it, a buck. The root figure for this is the actual body of the figure is like apparently it's like a Nightwing buck or something like that. Comparing it against other sizes, really putting it up against backgrounds, talking about articulation, like the guy did a fantastic job. And I was like, you know what? I should stop trying to strive for perfection and just do this thing. So I've just been in my head about it a little too much to just kind of have fun with it, which is ultimately what I would want to do, is just create a fun little video for myself. And if other people watch it, great. But I've been in my head about it for so long. I just wanted to let you guys know it is coming, because I'm on the downturn of getting all worked up over the specifics. So and plus, actually, I got something else recently in the mail too. I'll show it on the video. You know Fred Hembeck?
Yes.
He did a he does cards. He has an eBay store, and like every, I don't know if it's like every 6 months or whatever, but it's like, you know, there's a certain period of time where like every couple of weeks or whatever, it's like he'll drop another four cards, and they're the size of trading cards, so they're little sketch cards. But he did a Ragman, and I won the auction for it, and it's in my hands right now. So I have a Fred Hembeck original Ragman in my collection. So. I'll show that as a little bonus in the video too.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's Fred Hembeck, and even though it's the size of a trading card, I have no problem admitting I spent $60 on it. But Fred Hembeck is a name people are very aware of, so I don't see that as a ridiculous number to spend on something like this, but maybe some do. But I think it's cool. You don't get a very many popular comic book names drawing Ragman. So and putting out things that I can afford. There's a double page spread of Joe Kubert work from the original series that's been on eBay for a long time. I think it's from issue like 2 or something. Dude, the damn thing is like $10,000. But every time I start looking up Ragman on there, I'm like, maybe I should start saving $10,000. but I mean, that's Joe Kubert, man. That's something else entirely. But I'll get that video up. It should be up as you guys hear this. So go check out our YouTube channel.
I wouldn't worry about coming up with this huge script to do this. You just need to. My suggestion would be you just basically need to, just in your mind's eye, just the highlights of what you want to cover. And then just roll with it. Now. I know you tend to want to have things more scripted out than me, but that's maybe the way I think. I've always been more of a bullet type guy. As long as I have the bullets in front of me, that I can remember everything not that I literally have bullets written whenever I do any of those videos. They were kind of in my head, but the point is, it's the same basic concept. You know the beats you want to hit, and once you hit one beat, sometimes it'll lead you into something else. But I wouldn't stress myself out to overthink it that much. But that's
yeah. All right. Well, if people want to check out our content on the YouTube or anywhere else, or reach out to us about what we spoke about tonight, how do they do so?
Lanterncast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. The YouTube channel is Lanterncast Vids. You can follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, #GLcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or a text, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.